You're above.
All right. We announced that the lesson for this morning was going to be on the judgment day. That's one appointment that all of us are going to keep. That's one appointment that we're never going to be late for. Now, just recently I was in Africa, and the people there have just accepted that it's their custom, it's their culture. They're late for everything. And they just make a joke about it. Well, that's Africa time. But you tell them, let's meet at 8 o'clock, they might show up at 10 o'clock. But when it comes to judgment day, everyone will be on time. Now, when we think about the judgment day and we think about the world where we live today, there are many people that divide the world into two categories. They say, you have the lost, you have the saved. Now, in the lesson today, I would like to suggest that there is a third category. Maybe you agree, maybe you don't agree, but let me present my argument. Yes, we have the lost, we have the saved, but then I also add another category. We have the safe. Now look at Levi. He's not a Christian, but he's not lost. He's safe. In the prayer, you were praying for your niece because of having lost the baby. We lost our third child. My grandbaby died when she was only 17 hours old. Now, I'm convinced that those children will be in heaven. They were never lost. They never reached an understanding where that they became sinners. And so, I like for us to comfort people. Now, when my daughter asked me to preach the funeral for my little grandbaby, and I used the words of King David, when that his child died, he said, I cannot bring the child back to me, but I can go and be with the child. And so, as much as I would love to have watched my grandbaby grow up, because they were twins, so I watched Emily today. Emily's now 14 years old. And often when I'm looking at Emily, I think, I wonder if your sister would have been just like you. I wondered if you would like the same colors, if you'd like the same dresses, if you would like, Emily loves to play the piano, she plays the flute. So I often think about the similarities or the differences. But even if I could bring Kayla back today, I wouldn't want to. I wouldn't want her to leave the presence of Jesus. And so, I've used that many times to try to comfort people when that there has been a death of a child, is that our tears are often because of our own selfishness, that I want to hold the baby, I want to watch the child grow up, I want to watch them play sports or play music, I want to watch them graduate from high school. I want to watch them march down the aisle on their wedding day. Those are things that I enjoy, things that I want. And so I think that we need to put it in a proper perspective, is that we all desire to go to heaven. Someday, there's going to be the judgment day. When we look at Acts chapter 17 and verse 31, it says, God has fixed a day in which that he will judge the world in righteousness through a man whom he has appointed. And I think we know who that is. That's Jesus. Having furnished proof to all men by raising him from the dead. Now, when they nailed Jesus to the cross, the devil thought he had won. The devil thought he had victory. But, again, what we talked about yesterday, from Genesis chapter 3 and in verse 15, the devil only hurt the heel of Jesus. But then when Jesus was resurrected, Jesus crushed the head. The devil now he's chained. Here's the way I compare it. If I go out to the farm and here's a big fence around this big field, and there's this big, big bull over in the middle of the field, and there's a sign that says, warning, danger. Now, as long as I stay on this side of the fence, that bull's not going to hurt me. But if I crawl over the fence and get in the field with the bull, then that bull might kill me. Now, during the ministry of Jesus for his 3 years, the devil had a power that he doesn't have today. During the ministry of Jesus, there were people that were demon-possessed. And I read the stories in the scriptures, and it sounds horrible. I mean, some of them would cut themselves. Some of them would foam at the mouth. Some of them would roll and go over into the fire. Some of them would run around naked. Some of them slept in the cemeteries. And so, during his ministry, Jesus showed that he had more power than the devil did because he could cast out the demons. Now, I do not believe that today that demon possession is possible. Now, what I do argue, I do not believe in demon possession, but I believe in demon obsession. I believe that you can fall in love with the devil. I mean, I have traveled all over the world lecturing on witchcraft and on Satanism. I've worked with many policemen in several locations where the teenagers have actually committed murders in the name of the devil. That they say, I'm a member of the Church of Satan. They even have a satanic Bible. But the devil cannot control you, and there's not demon possession. But I'm just totally obsessed with the dark arts or the occult or Satanism. And so Jesus, at his resurrection, he put a chain around Satan. I believe that's what the book of Revelation is talking about, of chaining him. Now, when we think about the day of judgment, yes, it is going to come. I don't know when. I don't know when it's going to come. But we're going to be there. And we were put here on this earth for a purpose. Now, a lot of people don't understand their purpose. God did not create me and put me on the earth just for my satisfaction, for my enjoyment, for my pleasures. We're put here for a purpose, and every work that we do will be brought into judgment. Now, I encourage people to try to get a good education. Maybe with a good education, you can get a better job. Maybe with a better job, you can make more money. But now, why is it good to make more money? Now, in the book of Ephesians, Paul talks about people that used to make their living by stealing. But now they've become a Christian. And now, in Ephesians, he writes, now, steal no more. Well, if I don't steal, how am I going to support my family? And Paul goes ahead and tells us. He said, stop stealing and start working. Well, why do I work? Well, so you can make some money. Well, why do I want some money? So you can do good things with it. You can help people that are not as fortunate as you are. And so, by having extra money, I see someone that's hungry, I can help feed them. I see someone that's naked, I can clothe them. I think we have examples like that in Matthew chapter 25. There might be a Christian that's a widow and doesn't have any children. And so I can help that widow woman. James chapter 1, verse 27, it talks about our pure religion, a religion that's undefiled before God. It says, you help the orphans. You help the widows. And so all of those things that I'm doing, I'm supposed to be doing it for the glory of God. Now some people, they divide their life like it's a big pie. And they cut the pie into different slices. And they say, this slice is education, this slice is your job, this slice is your family, and then here's one slice that's your religion. It shouldn't be that way. You see, if we think of a pie, there needs to be another circle right in the center and that says God. And then everything else that I do, all of these other slices of the pie, connect with God. Now, as a Christian, is it wrong for me to have fun? Of course not. But the thing is, the fun that I'm having should be something that would please God. Is it okay to go play football? Of course. You need the exercise. You need to take care of your body. But if I'm on the field playing football, what if I show anger? What if I fight with someone? What if I curse someone? You see, even my recreation is supposed to be touching this inner circle of God. What about the kind of books that I read? What about the music that I prefer? What about the movies that I go to? See, everything in my recreation should be touching God here in the center. What about where I work? Do I have a reputation that I can't get along with people? Do I have a reputation? You better watch him because he'll steal some things. He'll put them in his pocket and take them home with him tonight. Or do I have a reputation of honesty? You see, I'm put here for a purpose. And come the judgment day, I'm going to be judged for the kind of life that I live in every area. Now, the Bible tells us in Matthew 25, all people from all nations will appear. Jesus is going to be the fair judge. Now, in some of our courts around the world today, a lot of times the judges are not honest and the judges are not fair. But Jesus will be fair. And all nations are going to appear before Him. It doesn't matter whether that you're white, whether you're black, whether you're brown, whether you're red, whether you're yellow. Is that everyone is going to appear before Jesus. Now, when is this going to happen? Well, Hebrews chapter 9 says, it is appointed unto man once to die. Now, I have made many trips to India, and many of those people practice the religion of Hindu. Now, Hindus do not believe that there was a creation. They don't believe Genesis chapter 1. They argue that matter, things, are eternal. They've always existed. There was no beginning. And then they argue that there will be no end, because they teach the doctrine known as reincarnation. So you die, then you come back again. Now, depending upon how you lived in this life, that depends upon how you come back in your next life. So if you've been bad during this life, now your next life you might come back and be blind. Or in your next life you might come back and you might be a dog. So they say you never end. And so you die once, you die twice, you die three times, 100 times, 1,000 times, reincarnation. That's not what the Bible teaches. The Bible says one time you die, and then you're going to be judged. And so we will give an answer for how that we lived our life here with our purpose. Now, when's he going to come back? I don't know. In 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 through 14, it says that he will come back like a thief. Now, I'm going to ask a question. I think I already know the answer, because I think your thieves in Belgium are like our thieves in America. They don't call you on the phone and make an appointment. Is it okay if I come to your house Friday night at 10 o'clock and steal from your house? Do thieves do that here? Well, of course not. You don't know when the thief is going to come. And that's why Simon Peter is using that type of analogy, that Jesus is going to come like a thief in the night. So you don't know when it's going to be, so you had better be ready. But it is an appointment that you are going to keep. It is an appointed day. Now, here's what I like to, especially when I'm talking with teenagers. I love to be outside and look up in the beautiful blue sky and find the biggest white cloud I can find. And I like to use that to keep my mind focused on spirituality. In Acts chapter 1, when Jesus was ascending off of the Mount of Olives, when he defied gravity, just all of a sudden he starts floating up into the sky. We can't do that, can we? And here Jesus starts floating up into the sky, and the apostles are standing there watching him, and he's getting further and further, and he's getting smaller and smaller. And then an angel appears and says, "Why do you stand here gazing up into the clouds?" Just as Jesus is leaving in the clouds, he's going to come back in the clouds. So every time that I look outside and I look at that big white cloud, is that the one? Is today the day? Now, if my mind is thinking about Jesus and I know that he could be coming back at any moment, do I want to have a marijuana joint in my hand? Do I want to have a beer bottle here? Do I want to be sitting at home watching some pornographic movie? Do I want to be engaging in some other sin, of whether I'm stealing or whether I'm in fornication? If I can keep my mind focused, Jesus could come back today. Am I ready? And do I want Jesus to see what I'm doing? Now see, I can hide something from the two of you, but I can't hide it from Jesus. And so if I can always have that in my mind. Now, many of the sins that are committed in the world are often committed during darkness because they think nobody can see them. There's more stealing at night than in daytime, right? More people go and get drunk. More people commit adultery at nighttime than in daytime. But it doesn't matter whether it's day or night. We cannot hide from God. God sees all. God knows all. The day of judgment is going to be something that we cannot escape from. Is that all will hear his voice. And John chapter 5 says that all will come forth. Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians 5 that all must appear before the judgment seat of Christ. Now, I will not answer for you. You will not answer for me. We each one stand there and we give an account. Now, that's even true with mommy and son. You're not going to answer for your children. And the children are not going to answer for mommy. Each one will give an account. Each one will answer for themselves. And those who neglect salvation will not escape. Is that we cannot run away from God. We cannot make up our own rules here. Now look at what the wise man tells us in Ecclesiastes chapter 12. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. So on this day that all things are going to be made known. Now there's an Old Testament passage. Now let's look at one in the New Testament. There is no creature hidden from his sight. But all things are naked and open to the eyes of him to whom we must give an account. He knows all things. He knows all people. He knows who is lost, who is saved, and who is safe. Now you see, people ask me sometimes, at what age should you be baptized? Now some of the denominations, the Baptist Church, the Anglican Church, you got to be baptized at 12 years old. Why did they choose 12? Well, Jesus was 12 years old when he went to the temple. But what does that prove? Now, at what age should you be baptized? I think that depends upon a lot of things. It depends upon your maturity. It depends upon your education. It depends upon your upbringing, your background. It depends upon how mom and dad have taught you. It depends upon how well that you understand sin. And at what age do you see yourself as a sinner? Now, I have met some 13-year-olds that were more mature than some 15-year-olds. And so I cannot go to the calendar and mark, this is the year or this is the month that you need to be baptized. It's a matter of when that you understand, when that you know that you are a sinner, and you know that you need Jesus. All things are going to be made known by God. We need to reach a point where that we can see ourselves as God sees us. Now, when we think about the judgment, it's going to be according to truth. It's not going to be according to family tradition. It's not going to be according to our ethnic background. It's not going to be according to our culture. There's not going to be one truth for Africa and a different truth for America and a different truth for Europe. Is that we have to understand God is the Creator. And so all people in all nations are going to be judged by the same standard. Now let me give you a couple of examples. As you know, that I travel to a lot of different countries. I try to live with my conscience being clean. I try to live where I'm trying to please and honor and bring glory to God. Now there are some places where I go that their culture, their traditions are different than mine. Now, I don't try to change their culture if the culture is not violating the Bible. Now, let me give a couple examples. When I go to China, when I go to Japan, when I go to Taiwan, I eat all of my meals with chopsticks. Now, I don't use chopsticks in America. But when I go into their culture, I try to adjust, and so I will eat all of my meals with chopsticks. When I'm in Sri Lanka, I eat all of my meals with my fingers. They do not provide a spoon or a fork. You just eat everything with your fingers. In Sri Lanka, the men do not wear pants. They have the longi cloth that wraps around you. It looks like a skirt. So I can do that. In India, no one ever wears any kind of shoes inside the house. So I preach barefoot. That doesn't bother me. I can adjust to the culture because I don't see anything in that culture that's going to violate the scriptures. But then, let me give you a couple other examples. Is that in Africa, and I've been to Kenya and to Ghana and to Uganda and to Tanzania and to the Cameroon and to Mozambique and Zimbabwe and a lot of the African countries. Well, in some of those villages, in some of the African countries, I go in, and the women that are not married only wear a skirt. The top is bare. So here's the women with their bosom showing. And they say, well, Bob, that's our culture. We want the young single men to know what they're going to get. And so it's like an advertisement. Hey, look at me. I'm available. And then as soon as they get married, now she puts on a blouse. She covers herself. So I said, wait a minute. They said, oh, but Bob, that's our culture. I said, but this is immodest. This will provoke the men to lust. So you see, I have to teach against their culture. Now, another place in Africa, I went and met the chief. In some of the villages, you have to have permission from the chief in order to come in and teach the Bible. So I go to the village and I sit there and I talk to the chief for about 15 minutes. I usually take him a little gift. Maybe I take a small flashlight or take his wife a little piece of chocolate. And so we visit for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And then I finally say, now, chief, you know why I'm here. I'm wanting to teach Bible in the village, and I'm not allowed to do that without your permission. And so, will you give me permission? Many times they said yes, and so everything's wonderful. Sometimes, I had in one village, the chief came because he wanted to introduce me. And so he stood up and he made a speech. And he said, I'm not a member of the Church of Christ, but I want all of you village people to listen to him. because he's going to tell you the truth. And if all of you would follow what he's saying, we'd have a better village. There wouldn't be any stealing. There would not be any fighting. There would be no fussing. And so you listen to him. And I thought, that's great. Thank you. But then I went to another village, and after I met the chief, he said, I want to introduce you to my wives. I thought, did I misunderstand him? Wives? And yes, he had five wives. Now what am I going to do? I had to teach against that. I had to teach that God's plan is one man, one woman, for a lifetime. But you see, they argue, but Bob, you live in America. You have your culture. We live in Africa. We have our culture. I said, no. I said, we're going to be judged according to God's truth. And God's truth is the same truth in any country that you're visiting. Now, when I was in Norway, I was so sad. I was just almost making me sick to my stomach. I would meet so many teenagers, and they were nice, nice young people. But then they were telling me about the drugs they use and how much beer they drink and how early in life they started having sex. And they just didn't know any better. Because I talked to about 12 or 15 of them in a group one time. They said, we know nothing about God. And one young girl, she said, I don't think I would call myself an atheist because an atheist says, I do not believe in God. She said, I just don't know. She said, you're the first person I've ever met that claims to be a believer in God. I've never held a Bible. I've never read. We don't have a Bible in our house. She said, I'm 18 years old. My mom and dad, in my whole lifetime, they've never mentioned anything about religion. They've never argued for it. They've never argued against it. It's just never, ever discussed. She said, I know nothing about God. I know nothing about Jesus. I know nothing about the Bible. But then I had to remind them that come the judgment day, the people in Norway are going to be judged the same way that people in America or the people in Europe. And so there's not one gospel for Europeans and a different gospel for Africans and a different gospel for Americans. We're all going to be judged according to that one truth. The impenitent will not escape the condemnation of God. That's what Paul is saying in Romans chapter 2 in the first three verses. You say you don't know God. You say you don't know the Bible. You say that you've never repented of anything. You're saying you haven't repented because you don't know. Well, but that's not an excuse. If you are condemned, it will be your own fault. Because God gave you a brain, and God gave you a book. And so even if no one else is spending any time teaching you, you have a brain with which that you could read it. And so you're going to be condemned because of your own life, because of your own deeds, is what verses 6 through 10 is telling us. And God is not going to have any favoritism. There's not going to be any partiality. Is it the Queen of England or the President of the United States or some prince in the Netherlands? There's not going to be a partiality and say, well, you will be judged under different rules than what these other people will be judged. No, there's going to be one standard, and everyone will give an accounting according to that one standard there. And so that standard is God's standard, not mine. And so that's how that we're going to be judged. But then we have to understand that it's going to be final. That at the day of judgment, then God's going to separate the people. He uses a lot of different languages in the New Testament. He talks about separating us into the sheep, into the goats. Now, here's what I have to understand. I cannot live my whole life with the goats and expect to die like the sheep. And then sometimes he talks about separating us to the right side and to the left side. And so we look at it, so the right side, this is where the sheep are. The right side is the good side. Then the left side is the goats. The left side is the bad side. And then we're going to have one group that Jesus is going to say, go away from me. I don't know you. You're not my disciple. You've not been following me. Go off into eternal punishment. And then to the other side, he says, well done, good and faithful servants. Let's go home. And so heaven and hell are real places. Now, the denomination called the Jehovah's Witnesses, they want to argue that heaven is a real place and it will be eternal, but that hell is not a real place. Well, as we study the Bible, we see that both of these are real places and both of them are going to last for eternity. And so it's going to be a final judgment. The righteous will receive everlasting life in heaven, but the wicked will receive everlasting punishment in hell. So there's rest and glorification for the believers, but there's everlasting punishment for those who do not obey the gospel. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, verses 7 through 9, it's talking about the future. It's talking about approaching this day of judgment. And it says, in flaming fire, Jesus is going to come back in judgment against the world to those that do not know God and to those that do not obey God. So we got two different categories. There are a lot of people that maybe Peter has studied with. They've read the Bible. They've read some of Peter's lessons on the internet. They know the truth, but they refuse to obey it. So that's why Paul says the judgment will be for these people. Now, on the day of judgment, you're going to be there. I'm going to be there. And I'm going to have to give some answers for some questions. While I was living, what did I do with my body? Did I really care for it? Now, I'm not trying to become the big muscle man so that I get my picture on some sports magazine. But did I try to take care of it? Did I get proper rest? Did I get proper exercise? Did I get proper food? Did I drink enough water? Am I concerned about my vitamins and my minerals? And so, or did I ruin my body? Now, sadly, my father and my mother were both chain smokers. My father died when he was 57. My mother died when she was 61. I had some uncles that were alcoholics. And so I watched people destroy their body because of their lifestyle. In Africa, I've met many of people that have HIV or AIDS because of their lifestyle and sex. They have ruined their body. So come the day of judgment, that's going to be one thing that we're going to give an accounting for. What did you do with your body? The second thing, what did you do with your mind? Have you turned your mind into just a garbage disposal? Again, that comes back to the music we listen to, the books that we read, the jokes that we tell or that we listen to, the movies that we watch. Is that now, in learning how to use a computer, they have an expression in the computer class. It says garbage in, garbage out. So if you type in the wrong stuff, you put wrong stuff in, you get wrong stuff out. And that's the way that the mind is. Garbage in, garbage out. So what did you do with your mind? What was your attitude towards God? What was your attitude towards His Word? What was your attitude towards His people? What was your true focus in life? What were your priorities What influence did you have on your neighbors? Do they know you as just a grumpy old person? Do they know you as someone that is always complaining? Or do they know you as someone that's friendly, someone that would be helpful, someone that is forgiving, someone that is loving? What type of a reputation do we have? And then one question that we really need to ask ourselves, who did you bring to the Lord? When's the last time that we invited anyone to study with us? Let's talk about Jesus. There are many people that are having many problems in life. Now, do we want to help them with their problems? Do we want to offer them a better life? And do we want to say, Jesus is the answer? Now, there's a great day coming. We sing a song. I don't know if you have it in your book or not, but we sing a song. There's a great day coming. Will it be a day of rejoicing for you, or will it be a day of terror? You see, we're going to be judged, and we're going to hear one or the other. In Deuteronomy, Moses wrote this for us in chapter 30, verse 19, I have set before you life and death. So now you have to choose. Which one do you want? You either choose life or you choose death. When Joshua was going to lead the Israelites across the Jordan River to go into the Promised Land, in chapter 24, verse 15, he said, choose this day whom you will serve. And then do you remember what he said after that? As for me and my house, we are going to serve the Lord, but you have to choose. Now in Matthew chapter 7, in verses 13 and 14, Jesus says, enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction. There are many who go in by it, because narrow is the gate and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it. Now that's not my doctrine. That's not my theory. That's a statement from Jesus. Now today we look at all the denominations. We look at the Catholics, they're big, aren't they? We look at the Baptists, they're big. The Anglicans, they're big. The Dutch Reformed, they're big. And there are only a few that are trying to follow the Bible to be simply Christians. I don't want to belong to a denomination. I just want to be a Christian. And so Jesus said, there are going to be many that go on this road to destruction. There are just going to be a few that get on the right road. The day of judgment will come. The day of judgment will be inescapable. All things are going to be made known. We've already argued it's according to truth. It's going to be final. Now, if you were called to meet the Lord today, if this was the judgment day, where will we spend eternity? What you hear the Lord say to you is up to you. In Matthew 25, come, inherit the kingdom prepared for you. Or are we going to hear in verse 41, depart from me, go into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. So the judgment day is coming. So what are we going to hear? Are we ready for that day? Something for us to think about.